This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 215.
Hello, and welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk about our favorite races, hidden talents or lack thereof, low and high moments as a runner, and reflections on what makes the marathon so special. And in the quick tips segment, we'll explain how to get to the root cause of a running injury. And just a reminder, you can get expert help in achieving your running goals in the Academy. Head over to our website, marathontrainingacademy.com, to learn more about the benefits of Academy membership. So, Angie, this is our very, very last podcast episode that we will record from our house in Southeast Missouri, because in 3 days, we are moving.
That's right. This podcast has never moved before, so.
We've recorded plenty of times on the road.
Yes, in many different states, but we have not moved our permanent office.
So everything is in boxes pretty much around us.
We're getting plenty of cross-training by packing, lifting, moving.
Yes. So this episode is actually going to be an interview from our podcasting friend, Tina Muir. She has the Running for Real podcast, and we were on her show. She interviewed us and gave us permission to release the recording here on the MTA podcast, which is going to save us a lot of time since we're kind of busy with moving right now. So we appreciate that. But what was cool about this conversation with Tina is she asked us questions that we've never been asked before and details that we've never shared about our lives. So we thought it'd be fun to play that for you guys. It's a fun conversation, and we also talk about a lot of good mindset stuff, and I know you folks will enjoy it. Before we get into that, we want to do a short little news roundup here. So Angie, take it away.
Yes, we recently saw that Camille Herron became the first American woman Comrades champion since 1997. She finished in 6 hours, 27 minutes, 35 seconds. It's actually an 89-kilometer run, which is the oldest and largest ultramarathon in the world, in South Africa, of course.
So it's 55 miles, but they call it the Comrades Marathon.
Exactly. It's kind of considered the Boston or New York of ultras. It was first run in 1921, and I mean, it's like the run to do in South Africa. I mean, yeah. Everything is geared around Comrades. And today the event is capped at 20,000 entrants, and you must run a qualifying race to enter. And it's interesting because it has a point-to-point course, but it switches directions every year. So on the up year, it starts in Durban, but then in the down year, it starts in Pietermaritzburg. So this year, Camille Herron won on an up year, climbed more than 6,000 feet while she was battling a hamstring injury. So really a big accomplishment.
And it was really cool because we've had Camille on the podcast. It's been a while, but back in 2012, I think we had her on. That year, she had won the Route 66 Marathon in Tulsa, Oklahoma, while running dressed up as Spider-Woman.
That's right. She's definitely takes on some interesting challenges. And I guess next up for her is Western States Ultra Marathon coming up in just a couple short weeks, I think.
That might be her 100-miler debut.
Maybe so.
And that'd be amazing if she won it.
We need to have her back on the show, whatever the case. That'd be really interesting to talk about.
It would. And she likes to homebrew her own beer.
Well, there you go.
We'll have you on the show, but you got to send us a growler.
She'd be like, no thanks.
Who are you guys again?
Also in the news, Harriet Thompson, people may remember her. She added another world record to her collection. Harriet is 94 years old, and she became the oldest woman to run a half marathon when she finished this year's San Diego Rock and Roll Half Marathon. She did that in 3 hours, 42 minutes, 56 seconds. And she beat out the previous oldest woman, who was 93 years old. And we have talked about Harriet on the podcast before. She is a 2-time cancer survivor, and she always runs on behalf of a team in training. She's run the San Diego race, I think, at least 16 times, only missing 1 year because she was undergoing cancer treatment. And she has raised over $115,000 to battle the disease since then as well. So definitely a huge accomplishment.
So there you go, folks. You're never too old to be a long-distance runner.
That's right.
Okay, so what is going on out there in MTA land? Folks that are training with us or folks that are listening to the podcast?
We'd like to say congratulations to Academy member Kristen, who ran her first half marathon at the Med City Half.
Love it.
This note comes from Mario in the Academy. He says, I was able to PR on my marathon time at the San Diego Marathon. Hat tip to Coach Chris Gallaty for his help. It was exciting and disappointing at the same time. I really wanted to break 4 hours and was so close, but a stupid hill got me at the end. But most importantly, it was an honor to have run the San Diego Rock and Roll Marathon as a St. Jude hero. Thank you to all who donated. It's such an amazing organization and have saved the lives of many children.
Well, congrats, Mario, on the PR, and keep up the good work.
And speaking of Coach Chris, he recently posted in the group, he got first place in a triathlon, and here's what he says. He said, I did a local sprint distance triathlon this morning. It was a small race, only about 50 people, but I ended up finishing in first place. The challenge was that I got off my bike and my running shoes got misplaced. So I ended up running the 6K in my bare feet. Not recommended. My feet are really beat up.
Hashtag like a boss. Hashtag no excuses.
That's right.
That's awesome.
And this final note comes from Kate. She says, Hi, Angie and Trevor. Thanks for wishing me luck during my marathon. It turned out to be a great day. The weather was absolutely perfect, and I honestly could not have asked for a better first marathon experience. Anyway, I managed to run a Boston qualifying time of 3:31, which was so much faster than I expected. I can't thank you enough for your podcast. You two have been such an inspiration to me as I trained. Thanks for all you do. And Kate had written in earlier asking a question about severe shin splints that she had been dealing with.
Yeah, in fact, we covered that question, or I should say Dr. Ben Chateau, who was on that episode, dove in her question. So, you know, what does that go to show you? That you could be 10 days out from your marathon and have a lot of doubt. But, you know, if you dig into maybe some of the root cause and determine that you're okay to go, maybe you're not like 100% confident, but you never know what you're capable of if you just go for it anyway, right?
That's right. It certainly worked out very well for Kate. So congratulations.
Okay, well, that's it for the shout outs. Let's go ahead and get into our conversation with our friend Tina Muir. She's going to ask us about our favorite races, and we reflect upon the marathon, what makes it so special, and we'll also share some details about our lives. Hope you guys enjoy it. We're just keeping it real. Let's go ahead and get into that right now. Well on my way, well on my way.
So last week was absolutely jam-packed with mental advice for training, racing, for peak performance with Dr. Brett McCabe. And today is a bit more of a fun one. I have Angie and Trevor from Marathon Training Academy, and between us, we've done a lot of podcast chats. I've been on their Marathon Training Academy podcast twice, and Angie was actually on Run to the Top. But today I have them both together, and it's so cool hearing the inside look at this, I guess, celebrity couple, you could call them. Angie and Trevor inspire runners from all over the world to give marathons a try, and you're going to see why they're so wildly popular. So that's enough from me. Let's get on with the episode. Hello to Angie and Trevor, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me for the Running for Real podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. It's great to see you again, Tina.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on the podcast. It's exciting.
I know. I'm excited. This is going to be a fun one and a bit more of a, whenever I talk to you guys, it ends up being really casual and kind of just fun. I had quite a few people reach out to me when I talked about raising my hands when you interviewed me last time and how I didn't know what to do with my hands at the end of a race. So I realized that was probably more of the focus than it should have been about actually something helpful. But I guess if that makes people remember our episodes, then great. So speaking of that, I'm going to ask you guys, I've decided I'd like people to tell me a fun fact or a hidden talent that they have about themselves. So do each of you have something you'd like to share?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't really call it a talent, but I really love to play the piano. Ooh. I took lessons as a child. And then at age 16, I convinced my parents to let me quit because I hated it at that point. So I took 20 years off from the piano and just started playing a couple of years ago. And I really use it for relaxation and enjoy it a lot. And of course, now I'm paying it forward by making my oldest two sons take lessons. So.
That's so cool. And that's so funny, isn't it? How often we, things you did as a kid and you were forced to do, which running was probably one of them, we end up loving when we're older. We're just like, oh, why didn't I think to, you know, listen to my parents? And then you're experiencing now the other side of it. Like you're telling your kids, you should do this. And they're probably like, oh, mom, I don't want to. And
exactly.
It's so funny.
You'll thank me someday.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool, though. I'm jealous. I've always wanted to be musical, but never really come to me. So.
Well, you could probably, teach a trained chimpanzee to play better than I do, but I still enjoy it. So there it is.
Yep. And that's all that matters. And Trevor?
She won't play in front of anybody because she's really shy about that.
What about you? Hopefully she'll play in front of you, right?
Well, not if I ask her to. She doesn't do anything on command. I haven't trained her well enough. I actually play the guitar, but Angie doesn't let me play it around her.
He knows 5 songs and he plays them every day. And so yeah, they've gotten a little bit old.
So the MTA band is not going to happen for many reasons here.
I don't think so.
I'm afraid not. I think the podcast will be our only collaboration.
Yep. Well, I was actually thinking about this question about like a hidden talent. I don't know if I have a hidden talent, but I'm actually a better downhill skier than I am a runner. So I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, I'd say that counts. Is that what you've always done that? Or is that something in the last few years you tried it and you're like, actually, I'm pretty good at this?
I grew up near the Sierras in California and my dad could get free lift tickets. So I grew up skiing and I'm pretty confident at it, but don't get to do it a whole lot in Missouri. So
yeah.
I might be pretty rusty now.
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of those things like, riding a bike, isn't it, though? You might get a bit rusty, but like, you can pick it up pretty easily.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. And I think cross country skiing would be great cross training. We hardly get any snow where we live now. I think it snowed once this year and then it was gone in like an hour.
Did people freak out and stop buying canned food and
they
water?
Do that. Yeah, this is weird.
It's like no bread or milk in the store.
They'll cancel school. And I'm like, this is a Canadian summer out here. Why are you canceling? This is nothing. And I think it's snow challenge. I call the area snow challenge.
Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, I think the same here in Kentucky. Okay, so we've interviewed one another a few times. You've had me on MCA twice and I've had you on Run to the Top. But last time it was just Angie when I had Run to the Top. So I'm excited this time I've got you as a couple. So I wanted to ask, I want to kind of watch your reaction here more, even though the listeners can't see it, because I get asked this all the time by Steve, but how does it work with you two, working together, living together, doing everything together, running together, going to races together? How does it work? Because I know that we get asked this and I'd love to hear what you two think about this.
We never have any disagreements.
Ever?
Big liar, right? I would say I'm probably more of like the time sensitive person. Like I have like this agenda, like we need to be at the starting area of the race at a certain time. And he's kind of
like
more
an
laid
hour
back.
Early.
He's like, we get there, and so there's a lot of friction because we have, very different personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a type A personality. He's kind of more of a rebel, but so there is friction obviously in our mm-hmm. relationship, but we managed to make it work for the greater good. And it is fun if you can realize that it would be really boring to be married to someone exactly like you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn to appreciate those differences. Mm-hmm. And, over the years, we've been married almost 14 years. So you kind of get to know the other person, how they're going to respond. And
mm-hmm. and you just made me think. So you had Gretchen Rubin on the podcast recently.
Yeah.
What did you both get as your tendencies?
I'm a rebel and mm-hmm. she's an upholder.
It's like the hardest pairing.
Is that what she said?
She says, in the book, if an upholder and rebel stay married, then I'm like,
they stay married. Wow.
We talked to her about that because we just had her on, mm-hmm. I think in February, and we got a lot of laughs out of, our upholder rebel relationship and idiosyncrasies that we have and stuff. It was fun talking to her about that. Like Angie wants to get to the marathon start line like an hour early and stand around and shiver.
Sounds reasonable to me.
And I'd rather sleep a little bit extra and get there and just sort of jump in right as the corral is starting to move.
Are you that one that's pushing to the front in the last minute?
He's still in the porta pot in the last minute.
Wait, the race is started.
I'm not running competitively. I'm just a middle of the pack runner. So, I'll just jump in and try to have fun and not get too much in a rush.
So I'm sure most of your listeners are going to relate more with me who, you kind of feel anxious if you're not there early and, have those things under your control that you can. So, yeah, it's a little bit challenging.
I remember when she was trying to qualify for Boston and back in those days, we had Angie's mom living close so she could watch her kids. And so Angie and I can go to these races. And we went to the Kentucky Derby Marathon in Louisville, you know, in your neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to get Angie to the starting line. I was doing the half, she was doing the full, and she wanted to qualify for that, for the Boston Marathon at that race. And there was this porta potty line that was just went forever. And there was like only a couple minutes to the race start, and she wasn't going to make it to her corral. So I just asked these ladies if we can cut in line. And I told these ladies what her goal was and what we were trying to do. And of course, runners are really cool. And they're like, yeah, yeah, come on. We don't care about our time. So come cut right in.
I was mortified, of course. And if, you know, he had left when I told him we needed to leave, there wouldn't have been that issue at all.
So you learn as you go, I guess.
Yeah, no, this sounds like a pretty similar conversation that Steve and I have sometimes. So this is funny. Funny to hear it from someone else. And you mentioned, you go to all these cool races. Like, of course, you come to Kentucky, which I'm not going to say it's the best place ever, which... but I like it here, and yeah, that marathon is definitely a good one. But you do go like all over the world and just travel around to do all kinds of weird races and stuff. So I thought maybe I could ask you to name off some of the marathons in different categories. So firstly, I know this is like picking your favorite child, but a favorite marathon or a favorite race, I guess, from both of you.
I'll start off. I got the t-shirt on today, actually. The New Orleans Rock and Roll Marathon.
Is that just to rub it in that I didn't meet you that time?
Oh, that's right. We were there at the same year.
Anyway.
You were like 3 hours ahead of me probably at the race.
Keep going.
So I love the city of New Orleans. I think the Rock and Roll Marathon series is a lot of fun. They do a great job of organizing it. And the finisher's medal has Mardi Gras beads. So
yeah.
The first half is a lot more fun than the second half for those looking at the race. So if you're going to run the full marathon, just gut it out the second half because there's not much to see or there's not much crowd support.
Oh, really? Anyway. It's too early in the morning probably for all the drunks to be up.
Yeah.
It kind of runs through the park area along Lake Pontchartrain.
And it can get kind of hot. It was really hot down there this year from what I've heard. Mm. But still, I love, as far as races in the U.S., I think that is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. And Angie?
Ooh, I would say, I mean, besides the Boston Marathon, which, you know, is an incredible event, I really love the Marine Corps Marathon. Mm. I just think it has an incredible history. It's very patriotic. You just see so many incredible people who are participating in the race. And the starting area is just, they really do it up with, you know, flyovers and parachuters and... So, yeah, I think that's just a really fun race.
Oh, cool. I've never done it. I've never been to it, but I've heard so many good things about it. So that'll have to go near the top of the list now.
That's all right.
How about weirdest race or strangest situation in a race you've come across?
I'm thinking back to a 50K that I did this summer in California. It was called the Shadow of the Giants 50K.
Yep.
And it's just this kind of, you know, little rinky-dink trail 50K
in the Mariposa Grove, California, near Yosemite.
So it was incredibly beautiful and scenic. And the race director was a piece of work. Let me just tell you. I mean, you know, talk about a little bit of sexual harassment going on. And, you know, if he wasn't so old, you would have been like, you know, I would have been really offended. It was just kind of one of those people that you're like, is he seriously just saying what I think he's saying?
Yeah. And we're laughing about it because like this guy is, that was sort of his persona, his personality, and people, he almost has like a cult following. I think like people show up and do his races. His name is Baz and he's so politically incorrect, but he really does care about people. He's all, giving all these runners a hug, and especially the female runners. You know, and he's giving out like expired beer and gel. And just really just weird, but fun.
Definitely had a very strange vibe. You know, you don't get a medal. It's just kind of all about, you know, being out in the mountains and having this cool running experience. So I would say that was probably one of the most unique ones that I've participated in.
Yeah. And Trevor, was that yours too?
I was with the kids. I didn't run that event, but you know, just a weird and very tough race is the Tupelo Marathon in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Okay.
Their motto is trample the weak, hurdle the dead.
Oh,
and
nice.
They always have like a skull and crossbones, Day of the Dead kind of theme. Mm-hmm. And it's really hot in September, Mississippi. So the marathon starts at 5 in the morning. And I've only done it twice. I did the full marathon in 1 year. I have done a half marathon. I did the half marathon last year. But
he just does it for the shirt, which is like a skull and crossbones and the medal. You know, they really do a good job with that.
Yeah.
So
it just has this vibe like, okay, if you want to come down here and run it, you can. But if you don't want to, then we don't care. But we're going to be having this race and, you know,
it's going to be hard and horrible.
Don't complain because this is what we're doing. But the people that run it love it. And lots of people do it like year after year.
Huh. I haven't even heard of that one. So that, well, that's a cool one. I just thought
this Elvis Presley was born. Tupelo, Mississippi.
Okay. Good to know. There's another, yeah. Interesting fact there. Are you one of those people that's full of random trivia?
I don't know. Am I?
In certain areas, yes.
When it comes to running locations, maybe, and what they're known for. So then how about best post-race food at an event? Any come to mind?
Wow. I love post-race food. The Missoula Marathon in Montana has an incredible spread of food afterwards. That was really good.
Watermelon on a hot day.
Yeah, that was really good.
I remember the Indianapolis Monumental Marathon had pretty good post-race food.
The Wine Glass Marathon in Corning, New York always does really good swag and post-race food. So yeah, I'm definitely all about the food.
Oh, yes.
I'm starving. Ready to eat everything.
I was saying the other day when I was doing a Facebook live chat, I was saying that, like, you know, you want to make your pre-race meal really, really boring, like almost too boring. Just the most simple thing but you can eat, and even in the week leading up to it. But then in your post-race meal, you can make up for it and go for the most crazy, intense, over-the-top, rich food to kind of balance out all the boring food you've been eating. So
exactly.
That's how it should be.
I might add that the Marine Corps Marathon has a donut mile.
What is
it's Angie's favorite mile?
So they offer
Dunkin' Donuts like about mile 23. So
yeah, I mean, it's like the perfect mile. Like, I mean, you're just dying, ready to be done. And then boom, you get donut holes.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know if I could pick them up though, if it was at that mile. Don't you feel a bit sick?
I'm guessing the elites probably don't stop.
Yeah.
But, you know, like the middle back of the pack, it's like all about that.
I'm like picking up extra donuts off the ground. And
So are you going to be doing, have you done a Krispy Kreme challenge or would you do it?
What's funny is I don't even eat donuts in everyday life. Just at a marathon on mile 23, I could slam some serious donuts, but I don't know. What is the Krispy Kreme challenge? Do you have to eat a donut every mile?
Yeah. I don't know if you do it every mile or if you do it all in one go and then you have to run afterwards.
No, I don't. That doesn't sound like fun.
Either way.
I wouldn't mind trying like a beer mile.
Oh.
One of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Where you got to, you know, chug a little bit of beer every mile or something. I might try that.
I have heard there's a beer half marathon, I guess, which makes me feel a little bit sick if that's really what it sounds like, because I can't even imagine like drinking 13 beers, let alone trying to do it. Okay. And then I did have a few more, but I want to ask you guys about marathon training and stuff like that. So what about a marathon that you would recommend as a challenge? Like if someone wanted something that was completely unique or like tough, what would you say?
I would say the Leadville Trail Marathon in Leadville, Colorado that's the hardest marathon I've done. I mean, it was harder than the 50-mile race that I did. It was because you start in Leadville, Colorado, which is above 10,000 feet, and then you start climbing from there. And so, you know, it took during the final climb to the very highest elevation that we got to, it took 30 minutes to go 1 mile because literally I'm just like stopping, like pretending to take pictures, but I'm like, you know, gasping for air. I was not acclimated, you know, coming from basically sea level.
Like here 300 feet.
It was amazingly incredible. You know, the views were spectacular, but was the toughest race that I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would, you know, probably take most people outside of their comfort zone, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And Trevor, anything, or would you say that too?
I didn't run that. I don't think I'd want to run that. No, maybe someday, but the Tupelo Marathon, I have to go back to it. It's in September and it's really hot in Mississippi and miserable. And that's maybe why they say trample the weak, hurdle the dead.
Very humid. Yeah.
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 No? And it's a little bit hilly too now since they've changed the course.
Okay, cool. Well, you've given us some good examples of races that people can try if they're looking for something different. So yeah, so speaking of which, so Marathon Training Academy, I mean, I don't really need to explain what you focus on there. And although you do obviously have people from all levels and all distances, but it seems like marathons have become kind of like the go-to thing. Like people don't feel like they're a real runner unless they run a marathon. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that and why you think it is that the marathon is almost the one you have to do to get that respect. I mean, Angie, you probably can speak to this more as you've done. I think, Trevor, you do only a percentage of the ones Angie does, usually the marathons. Is that correct?
I've done 12. Angie's done, what, like 48?
Yeah.
Counting ultras, yeah.
There you go. Yep.
I think the marathon is one of those bucket list type things because it represents something that still has the power to kind of wow people. And I don't think that's why most people do it, not just to like impress people. I think once you start running, sometimes there is that tendency just to think like, how can I push myself? How can I extend my distance? And I know for me, it was just one of those things that became a personal challenge. And I think for most people, you know, you can gut your way through a 5K, especially if you're not trying to race it at top speed. You know, training for a half marathon, very challenging, but there's a good percentage of people who do it. But if you look at the marathon, still less than 1% of the population will ever complete a marathon in their lifetime. So, you know, it's one of those pretty elusive clubs, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things you really can't or shouldn't just kind of wing it in your training. Yeah. You know, you're going to pay for it if you do not put in the time and the effort to train for a marathon. So I think it's one of those challenges that still remains outside of most people's comfort zones.
Mm-hmm. But yet it's a challenge that we believe most people are able to do. You know, like our tagline in our show is, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. It's a daunting challenge. It's an epic challenge, but it's one that is within reach of people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of, I think that really makes it unique.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you set your mind to it, you know, and you really truly have that inner desire to train for a marathon, that it is possible. Mm-hmm.
Do you think at all, you know, there's been some stuff in the press over the last few years about, oh, everyone can do a marathon. It's not really impressive anymore. You know, you need to go to an ultra or do something different because, you know, everyone's doing marathons. And do you think that's because you mentioned about, you know, people training for it and it's something anyone can do if they do the training? But do you think it's maybe because people aren't training and they are kind of winging it? Or do you have any thoughts on why people are saying this and do you agree with it?
You know, I would say probably a lot of the people who say, you know, the marathon's not much of a challenge anymore, probably a lot of those people actually haven't even run a marathon before. you know, they're just kind of looking at statistics like, well, you know, this many people and the marathon boom that hit, you know, the United States and other countries, it's becoming more popular. So we got to look to something else that is less heard of. And I think in the running community, it just depends on where you're starting out. You know, I would say it's still a big challenge. Now, people approach it with different motivations. You know, some people are looking to set a PR or a specific time they're looking to get. You know, some people are looking to qualify for Boston or the New York City Marathon. Some people just are looking to go the distance and cross that finish line strong and healthy. And so there's different reasons for people to approach the marathon. And I think there, you know, it's often easy for some people to get elitist that, you know, the marathon, like, well, if you don't break 4 hours in the marathon, or if you don't do this or that you're not a real runner, you're not a real marathoner. And, you know, I would just say that people have different motivations. For some people, it's more of a social type thing. You know, it's a healthy way to get together with people they enjoy being around and a good way to travel. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure like where that attitude is coming from. I can't say I've really heard that. I think there's two things I would say. One is there's something to be said about respecting the distance of a marathon.
Yeah, so true.
No matter how many you've run, you could go out there one day and run a marathon and it just humble you. I mean, so much could go wrong. So before someone says, oh, this is a piece of cake, just give it enough time, you'll probably have a bad race and you'll change your tune. And it's always important to respect the distance. And the other thing I would say is for people that are non-runners, they look at what we do. And they're amazed that anybody can run that far. And most of my friends still are, you know, in the community that we live are non-runners. And just running 10 miles seems pretty daunting when you're new, when you're starting out. So those that are listening, if you have run marathons, you have like this superpower to the larger population around you.
So true. And I'm glad you said that as well, because I think that is the case. And it's funny you mentioned about humbling. I remember the day before I ran the California International Marathon in December, I went to had a coffee with Matt Fitzgerald. And I said to him, he said to me, what's your plan for tomorrow? And I told him, and I said, what about you? And he said, well, you know, I should be able to run sub 250 with my eyes closed. I'd love to be able to run 240. And I was like, oh, okay, why do you say that? And he's like, because you never know with the marathon. It can just get you when you least expect it, even with, I don't know how many marathons he's done, but a lot. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, the next day, I think he ran like 257. And I texted him and said, what happened? And he was like, well, I was right. It humbled me. And that's so even someone like that who, you know, is an author and knows what he's doing, has written all these books, even he said he should be able to run 250 with his eyes closed. Yet he still didn't do it because something went wrong. So, yeah, you're exactly right. So, Angie, you mentioned this, but I'm sure, Trevor, you have some thoughts on this as well about being a real runner. And that this is something that runners often, you know, discuss. And I get a lot of people saying to me, well, I'm not an elite runner, so, you know, I don't X or Y or whatever it is. What are your thoughts on when people say what they need to do to be a real runner? Is there such a thing as a real runner?
I guess my perspective is if you do any amount of running and you identify yourself as a runner, you are a runner. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any level or any, you know, that you have to attain. I mean, certainly you don't have to run a marathon to be a runner. You can just be happy doing a run walk and still be a runner. I think it really just comes down to how you choose to identify yourself. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's what would be what I would say. I'd say people need to claim their identity as a runner and they will start living that out. It'll start, you know, kind of manifesting itself in their life more as they pursue that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great.
Yeah. We interviewed a psychologist one time named Jeff Brown. He wrote the book, The Runner's Brain.
Yep.
And there's a chapter in the book called I Think, Therefore I'm a Runner. And he says that you don't start running and then eventually you earn a title of runner. You basically are a runner if you decide to be, and you begin to form that identity. And then running becomes easier because if you identify as a runner, then you're going to be more prone to get your shoes on, lace them up and go out there because you want to live, you know, in congruency with your identity. Mm. You want things to be natural. So if you're struggling to motivate yourself to get out and do it, he says you could put little cues in your environment. You know, like today I got this marathon shirt on that I got at a race, and I'll wear shirts like that. Or, you know, we have our medals displayed and things like that. Just things that remind us of what our identity is.
That.
So that makes it more natural then to go out and run.
Mm-hmm. You're running shoes by the door, you know, just little things that remind you that you are a runner and you're pursuing that, whatever your goals with running are. They'll probably change throughout the years. They won't always remain the same, but keeping that core identity as a runner will, you know, really improve your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've
that.
Seen in my own life and for other people too.
So true. So then on the other side of things, how do you stop that from becoming so much of your identity so that when you get injured or have to, you know, family stuff comes up or like not losing that sense of identity?
Well, I think, like you said, if running is the only thing or the one thing that you identify as, there's probably going to be some kind of imbalance that's going to manifest itself in your life. You know, mm-hmm. your relationships may suffer, your health may suffer, things like that. So, I mean, running is one part of my identity. You know, it's something that I've identified as for many years, and I hope to be a runner for life. But it's not the most important part of my identity. And you have to keep that in perspective. You know, even for us where running is, you know, a business for us even, but it's not the most important thing. And keeping that in perspective that my overall health is more important than any short-term running goals mm-hmm. that I have. Mm-hmm. And so I have to rein myself in sometimes because, you know, sometimes it can kind of become a beast, mm-hmm. Feeding that constant desire to do more and to keep up with maybe people that you admire. You really have to just take a look at your own life and your own health and try to be wise about the things that you choose to pursue within the running world.
And maybe try to take ego out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ego gets us in trouble when we take a good thing like running, but we make it an ultimate thing so that so much of our self-worth and feelings about ourselves is based on our success in that area. And it can be crushing, you know, if you start to experience setbacks in pursuit of that thing that you've made so ultimate and so defining to yourself.
So true. So true. And actually, I was talking to Tawny Prazak yesterday, who's a good friend of mine, another podcast host. She was saying about a book called Ego is the Enemy, which she recommended that I read. I don't know if either of you have heard of it.
I've heard of that.
I want to check it out. And I will put a link in the show notes for anyone else who is interested in reading it. But she said it was really good for that exact kind of thing. So interesting. Mm. And then something for people who are, training for a race and they are coming up to their big race and they're nervous, they're doubting themselves, wondering how are they ever going to make it through the race. What do you usually tell your clients, or what do you recommend for people to kind of believe in the training and believe that they've got it?
I'm going to let Angie answer that since she's the one that has clients.
Well, I think it's really important to, especially realize as you get into that tapering period before your race that, your training is in the bag and anything that you do in those, last week or two is not going to improve your fitness level. So it's all about really being kind to your body during that time, letting it rest and get ready to have a great effort at the race. And it's also really important to have that mental preparation. We think so much about putting in the miles and the cross training and massage and, all that stuff that goes into it. It's so important, but our mind is really what drives all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage my coaching clients and, through the podcast for people to develop positive mantras, because we all have those self-doubts that come into our head. Acknowledging that doubt, acknowledging that fear, whatever it is, and then replacing it with something positive that you can tell yourself. And then when you get to that starting line, I just really try to focus on gratitude that, you have a strong, healthy body, that you are there, it's an exciting event, and just really try to soak in the blessing of it all and realize that whatever happens during the race, it's still really amazing that you get to be there. And, so many people wish they could be in that position. And so, I think gratitude is really a big part of it.
Oh, I love that. That's so good as well, because it's something that we quite often forget about when we're in it, like we're putting all this pressure on ourselves. We have to run this or that. But as people say, and it's so true, just getting to the start line healthy is like the biggest part. So yes. True.
And it's normal. I mean, if you would take a survey of all the people standing around before the start of a marathon and ask how many people are feeling nervous, probably the majority of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We should do that for a podcast episode. I've done like 12 marathons now, but I still get nervous before everyone. And it's like something in the back of my mind is saying, what are you going to do to yourself here? You're about to go through a beating.
Yeah.
This is going to, you paid to go through this pain and suffering.
But you go through that in the race as well, don't you? I go through that like all the time in the race. Like, why can't I be a normal person who sits and watches TV on a Sunday morning?
Why did I pick a different hobby or career?
then it's amazing how fast you forget it after you finish, and you get your medal, and you get some replenishment, some fluid in you, something to eat. And the rest of the day, it's just like cloud nine.
Mm-hmm. Ready to sign up again.
Yeah, usually does. That Sunday evening is runners all logged into there. I'd love to see like tracking of when runners tend to sign up for races, because I'd imagine most runners kind of do it at the same time.
Post-race euphoria.
Yeah, yeah. And you're wired from the race, because you can never sleep after a race because you're too excited. Well, I am anyway.
At least a few hours.
Yeah. So then let's talk about the podcast. So I've talked about it before when I had you on, Angie, on the Run to the Top podcast. So you've been going for, from what I read, just coming up on 7 years, which is amazing. And
thank you.
So exciting. And then Trevor, you wrote on I can't remember whether it was a tweet or something about you haven't run out of people to talk to yet. I get asked this all the time with the podcast, like, how do you not run out of people to talk to? So what would you like to say about that, like when people think that, like, how after 7 years are you not covered everything?
Running and marathon training is such a deep subject, so we can go in an inch wide and a mile deep, because we try to stay focused on marathon training. So we're not like really talking about, how to improve your 5K speed or something. But just within that one topic, there's so many little facets to explore and so many amazing guests. We really have no trouble finding amazing guests like Tina Muir. Have you ever heard of her? She's an amazing runner.
Yeah. And skip that episode.
And we actually get a lot of authors and We have turned people away. There's people that pitch us to get on the show, and but we've been able to so far manage. And another cool thing is Angie's also very knowledgeable and does excellent research into topics. So sometimes it'll just be her and I, and we'll just go deep into topic.
That's good.
And she creates the content, and I just ask dumb questions, and it works.
So that far,
makes
so
it
good.
More fun. Yeah. No, that's one thing I love about the podcast is you're so. It's so like even like this right now, it's like conversational and it's not like kind of forced about. So tell me about your back history of being a runner. Like it's very like fun, kind of easy to laugh along yeah. with. And I can just imagine people running along listening right now and they're kind of like chuckling to themselves. I mean, we've all done that where we've been listening to a podcast or something and you kind of laugh and you're like, oh. I bet everyone is one thinking I'm like a crazy person.
Well, that's what I'm after right there. I want laugh out loud funny. I want people to make fools of themselves because they're laughing so loud at the gym. Or here's my goal, Tina. I want someone to laugh so heartily at something on our podcast that they fall off a treadmill and have to, of course, they don't get hurt. They just fall off.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if someone does that and then now they call you from the hospital and say, hey, I'm going to come sue you because you tempted fate and you told the world that you said to the universe that I should fall off a treadmill and I did.
I think one thing that people enjoy, you know, any podcast that you start to follow over time is the way a person, you know, their story develops and you kind of become invested, you know, even in their lives a little bit. And so, you know, we're just average, normal people. I mean, you wouldn't look twice at us if we were at the mall. You know, we just have this story and, you know, a lot of awesome guests and, you know, of course, the great topic of running to delve into.
We really want to take runners on a journey, but the journey has to be about them. We don't want to just talk about ourselves because that's boring. But if we can share stories that connect with where they're at and their journey that they can, you know, draw from. Then that's what we try to do.
Yep, I love that. And then could I ask you, do you have a favorite episode? Or is this that just too hard to choose? Other than the Tina Muir episode.
You know what? As far as episodes, I always love talking to Tim Noakes. That guy explodes my mind every time we talk to him. Mm-hmm. And he's such a gracious guy. You know, he's a South African, you know, running scientist. And have you had him on your show?
No, actually, I haven't.
Try to get him. He's such a gracious guy.
Isn't he impossible to get a hold of, though? Unless you're in the know, in the friendship circle, which you apparently are.
Oh, wow. I didn't know I was in the friendship circle. Like, I'll make a connection for you. But then we had our Boston Marathon race recap when Angie qualified and went down there and ran it. That was a lot of fun.
I enjoy having different guests on. Like Gretchen Rubin is one of my favorite authors, and we've had her on the podcast a couple of times. Just being able to talk to some of our running heroes is really exciting. You know, I don't go back and listen to the episodes because I feel like it's really awkward to, you know, hear my own voice. it just kind of flows away for me. But yeah, we've had the privilege of talking to a lot of everyday runners, and of course, a lot of the running greats on the show, and it's really exciting.
Did you ever think that the podcast would get as big as it does, as it did? Like, was that ever like, if you'd have said to yourself 10 years ago, you're going to have a podcast and you're going to get over 100,000 downloads a month, what would you say?
If you would have told me it would have been about running, I would have laughed because I hated running.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, this is how far this journey's taken because I've gone from just being a total slouch and non-runner to now being a marathoner. But no, I wouldn't have thought it. And we just have a really great audience. And right from the beginning, these folks were very supportive and we started hearing from people and we've gotten to meet a lot of them in real life. They're real people.
Like real people.
They're amazing folks, people that you'd want to have as neighbors, you know, and relatives.
10 years ago, I didn't know what a podcast was. So that
that's true.
Tells you, you know, most of us, it's kind of a newer industry. And when Trevor, you know, broached the thought of starting a podcast, I was like, why would people want to listen to us? You know? And then my second thing was, well, if we do this, then you have to start running because that would be really awkward. We have a podcast on marathon training and you don't run. I mean,
So was that really the driving force to what started you running, Trevor?
Yeah. Cause I was just kind of dabbling in it. I mean, I've always been active, but I like team sports and running. I didn't really care for just running by itself. So I was sort of dabbling and maybe was up to like a mile or 3 miles. But Angie, I knew that her knowledge could help a lot of people and she had run marathons and of course has a nursing background. So I pitched the idea And that was the deal. That was the condition that I had to become more of a more active in my running and build up. And so you can actually go back way back into the archives and there's a recap of my first half marathon. It was in Little Rock, Arkansas at that crazy, that's another crazy fun marathon. And we should mention the Little Rock. That's when they have the marathon medals are like as big as a plate.
Oh.
And it's kind of zany. But I remember just running that first half marathon and my feet feeling so beat up. I felt like someone had held me upside down and like slapped the soles of my feet with a boat oar for like 3 hours.
It's a strange way of describing it as well.
I know. I was just like tenderfoot. I couldn't walk. But I finished in 2:02, so I was pretty happy about that time because I wanted to finish in around 2 hours. And I thought I'll never do a marathon. This is too hard. This half marathons are enough.
And but, then here you are. Yep, I thought that
I've
was
been drinking
funny.
The Kool-Aid. I've been drinking the Kool-Aid ever since.
You have. You're gonna start going with Angie to the ultras soon, right?
Yeah, I'll probably do one someday. Mm.
There you go. It's in there. Although I thought that was really funny when you described you wanted to run around 2 hours for the half marathon. That, again, shows that difference between you. Because, Angie, I bet you wouldn't say, I want to run around 2 hours, right? You would have said, I want to run 1:59:59 or something. Whereas you, Trevor, you're like, oh, I'll run around 2 hours. That's good. All right. I am going to hit you with the running for real 4 questions. So firstly, you can either both answer this or you can just one of you answer it. A unique nutrition tip or something that you enjoy nutritionally that you think people would like to try or should try.
I guess for me, I don't think this is unique. I mean, I'm certainly not reinventing the wheel here, but for me, planning nutritionally is so important. I feel like if you leave it to the last minute when you're tired and you're hungry and you don't know what you're going to make for dinner, it's probably not going to be a healthy choice. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage people to make a meal plan for the week, do all their grocery shopping at once, which helps remove temptations by going to the store, you know, 5 times a week. And then, you know, just really having those things that you're going to make. And I think that really can help take your running to the next level if you are dialed in nutritionally. You know, we don't eat a perfect diet either, you know, but we really generally try to, you know, at least 80 to 90% of the time be eating healthy whole foods. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have 3 kids. So it's very important for us to give them a good nutritional foundation as well. So,
yep. Trevor, anything to add? Or
I was actually just on Facebook answering a question about what to eat before a race. And something that Angie and I have been doing for years now is just running on an empty stomach, believe it or not. So nothing. I mean, I'll have coffee because I'm a coffee drinker, but that's it. And so I'll go out and I'll do a half marathon, a completely empty stomach, marathon. I mean, I'll take UCAN. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll take my UCAN, but as far as like any solid foods, like a banana or oatmeal, I haven't done that for years.
Wow. And Angie, you're the same?
I do. Well, I fuel with Generation UCAN about 30 minutes before the race. I just empty stomach. Okay. For me, it's just I would get digestive issues that would crop up. And, you know, I don't really enjoy visiting the porta pot 10 times during a race.
No,
so
it's
helpful for me.
Yeah. I was saying to someone yesterday that UCAN is, I think, the only thing any nutritional product I've heard of absolutely no one having any digestive issues at all. Like, I've never heard of a single case. So, okay, well, let's go on to the next question. If you would both share a running for real moment, maybe a funny moment or something that happened to you where, you know, you can just be honest and kind of show people that you're only human, like you mentioned.
Well, something that happened to me yesterday, I was at this kind of favorite trail that we have. It goes around an old golf course. And I was running in the morning. I tend to drink like a lot of water in the morning or tea. And so I was really, my bladder was getting full. And about halfway through the loop, they have this porta pot that I've used a few times. I'm like, oh, good. I hope it has toilet paper, you know, one of those woman's concerns. So I get in there. It has toilet paper. You know, I'm in the money. Start using the bathroom, reach for the toilet paper. And all of a sudden, like fire breaks out on my finger. It feels like it's just so painful. And I realize a wasp had made its home in the toilet paper roll.
Oh, no.
So, you know, this wasp falls off my finger and I'm just like, you know, basically bolting out of the place with my pants half up, you know, my finger throbbing. And, you know, I was thinking, this is one of those moments that you know, this non-Instagrammable, non-Facebook moments. Yeah. You know, people do not brag about this kind of stuff on Facebook. You know, it's always these like, oh, I'm at the top of the world, you know, moment. Yeah. And it's not, you know, like pants in one hand and your finger like swelling to three times its normal size on the other. So
It'd probably be more like someone would hold the hand out and have a wasp delicately sitting on the top. Be with nature.
Exactly. Nature hates me, basically. So,
well, thank you for sharing that. And Trevor, anything?
So this has to be an embarrassing or just a real
moment as a runner, you know, something that happened that, you know, people can either laugh at or like resonate with because they've been through it.
You know, I've had to skip a race before. I was signed up for the Tupelo Marathon a couple of years ago.
Hammering this race.
I know.
Yeah, it's weird how that turns out. They should pay me a little
anyway, keep going.
Commission. Anyway, I started developing an Achilles issue and decided, I talked to a physical therapy doc about it and decided, yeah, I need to rehab this and not go. So I was really disappointed with myself. And I was building up for, I think, the Marine Corps Marathon. So the Tupelo Marathon definitely wasn't like a goal race, which is something I wanted to do. But I remember just feeling pretty discouraged about getting injured. I mean, it wasn't a full blown injury, but I just, you know, had to skip a race. So if anyone's had to DNS, did not start, and you probably spent $100 that you're not going to get back. It happens.
Oh yeah, it does. And that, I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because that's not one that I think we would think of, but it is a moment where you're frustrated and annoyed, you know, at yourself and that you know, essentially, like you said, wasted that money. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And then on the other end of things, what about a high moment? What a moment was that meant a lot to you? So Angie, I guess maybe start.
Wow. I guess probably I think back to a race that was a really high moment for me was during the Foot Traffic Flat Marathon in 2014 when I qualified for Boston. It was just one of those races where you're like running along, you're looking at your watch, you're like, I probably shouldn't be running this fast, but it feels so good. And it's just like everything that could go right went right, you know, and those are really rare races, to be honest, you know, for me. And so it was just amazing. I didn't feel like it was that hard and ended up qualifying for Boston. And, you know, that really sticks out in my mind. It's just one of those times when you feel like you're in flow.
Yeah. Yeah. Those do not happen often. So
no, they don't.
Glad you enjoyed that. And I'm glad it got you a BQ. So
yes,
congrats on that. And Trevor?
I just feel that high moment every time I finish a marathon. I mean, there's been a couple where I've run and I didn't feel as tired afterwards. I mean, it didn't really like beat me up, and I don't know what, maybe just a good day for me. My training was better. You know, I peaked right at the marathon, but there's been some that I've done that have felt easier, and marathon's never easy, but dare I say, there's been a couple I've run that have been like, yeah. And I could still run further if I wanted to.
And that's always the best. That's always the feeling we're searching for, even though most of the time it doesn't get that way. But
chasing that.
And then, so speaking of races, what are you telling yourselves on the start line when you're like just before you're about to go? What do you tell yourself?
I always feel really good. For me, the most stressful part of the whole race is just getting to the starting line. So once I'm in the corral there, like I just try to really stay positive and, you know, not think too far ahead, I guess, and just really try to remind myself that I'm so grateful to be there, that I have a strong, healthy body, that no matter what happens out there, I'm just going to do my best and try to enjoy the moment and try to smile. So that's.
And she does. I mean, I think she smiles every mile. I haven't seen a race photo yet with her not smiling.
Aww, that's
I think
so
it's scientifically
cool.
Proven that if you smile, it actually makes it feel easier. And I always try to remind myself to look like I'm having fun. You know, for the spectators who are looking in, maybe thinking, what are these crazy people, you know, putting themselves through? That, you know, really when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, we do this for fun. And so I want to make it look fun.
Oh, no, that's good. And I think something that most of us don't think about enough. So thank you. And Trevor, anything? What do you tell yourself?
For my first marathon, Angie paced me. It was the St. Louis Rock and Roll Marathon. And most every mile I told myself this this mantra, don't let your wife think you're a wimp.
I guess that works. It's effective. You want to be the macho, be her knight in shining armor. So I guess.
I don't think I achieved that, but I did finish.
He contemplated locking himself in a porta pot to get away from me and my pacing.
Oh, were you like a slave driver there? Like, get back out here.
Well, yeah, he told me what his goal was. And so I'm like, okay, let's keep going with this. And you know how it is of the, you tend to rethink your whole life the last few miles of a marathon. So
that's so cool. You get to experience that together, though. That's one thing I wish I could run a marathon with Steve, but don't think it's ever going to happen. So
you never know. Never say never.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun, and I always love talking to you both, and I look forward to hopefully redoing this again with a 3.0, and this has been fun, so thanks.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Tina, and keep up the good work.
Well, this would be a good time to thank our episode sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ believes that marathoners are unsung heroes, and they have spent the last few years partnering to get lower rates on life insurance using science and data. And marathoners have a 29% lower risk of mortality and a 50% lower risk of heart disease. But many runners don't realize they can get a lower rate on their life insurance because of their healthy lifestyle.
Unlike other life insurance carriers, they can cater to runners with things like slow resting heart rates. They measure triglyceride and HDL cholesterol ratio in addition to HDL ratio. For low carb dieters, they measure waist to hip ratio in addition to BMI for those with muscular builds. And they minimize the penalty for adverse family health history if you're otherwise healthy.
So yeah, they're definitely bucking the trend when it comes to how life insurance carriers qualify you and what rate you get stuck in.
Very cool. Well, you can head over to healthiq.com/MTA to get a free rate quote and to take their marathon quiz, which we help create. And you can see what they can do for you. That's healthiq.com/MTA.
This episode is also brought to you by Bombas Socks. So, Angie, would you ever get the MTA logo tattooed on your arm?
No.
But you do have some tattoos.
I certainly do, yes.
Just about every person that I've met has a story that goes along with their tattoo. Well, the founders of Bombas are two guys, Randy and Dave, and they heard that socks are the number one requested clothing item in homeless shelters. So for every pair of Bombas socks that they sell, they donate a pair to those in need. And Dave promised Randy that he'd get a Bombas logo tattooed once they donated 1 million pair of socks.
Wow.
And he thought it would take like 10 years, but instead only took 2.5. And now Dave has a Bombas tattoo and a story to share.
I hope you got to choose the location of the tattoo, like not on his forehead or anything.
That'd be some hardcore branding
right there. That's right. I mean, I might get an MTA tattoo, like a very small one somewhere, very discreet.
Hey, all right, folks. Once we get to, we've already had 5 million downloads, so how about
50 million?
Okay.
That'll give me 10 years.
50 million downloads. Angie gets an MTA tattoo on her chin.
No. You'd have to look at me every day, so that would punish you more.
We're supposed to be talking about socks.
Yes, that's right. And we want you to know that Bombas are extremely comfortable socks. There's no annoying toe seam, no falling down your leg. They have added arch support. They've solved pretty much every annoying sock problem that you can imagine. So for the best socks in the history of feet, visit bombas.com/marathon today, and you'll get an additional 20% off your first purchase. That's Bombas, bombas.com/marathon.
And now it's time for this episode's quick tip. We want to talk about how to get to the root cause of running injury. We're kind of on an injury prevention kick here lately, emphasizing injury prevention strategies. Of course, we launched our Resilient Runner program with Dr. Ben Chateau, and that's a lot of folks have jumped on board that. So we want to dive into one of the recent guest articles that Dr. Ben wrote. Of course, we won't read the whole thing. We'll just sort of give you the Cliff Notes version here. You can find the full text over at marathontrainingacademy.com and just go and look up injury. There's lots of great articles. But when you get injured or you have a trouble spot, it's good to figure out what might have caused that, because there's always a cause and effect going on.
Exactly. And the two types of injuries that we see occur most often are overload injuries and then overuse injuries. So overload injuries would be things that are more of a one-time occurrence. So maybe you are sprinting and you suffer a hamstring tear, or you quickly and unexpectedly change directions while jumping over a root during a trail run, or not jumping over the root, and it causes a hip flexor strain.
Or like an ankle turn.
Exactly, things like that. that's when there's a quick and powerful force that's generated. It overloads the tissues and you get an injury.
Which we see more of the overuse injuries than we do the overload, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say long distance runners tend to have overuse injuries more. Although if you run long enough, you're going to trip and fall, twist your ankle, you know, bust something up probably, unless you're extremely coordinated.
At least with overload, you can always know what happened.
Right.
With overuse, you're like, how did that develop? You know, you got plantar fasciitis, you got Achilles tendonitis or something like that, and it just sort of sneaks up on you sometimes.
Right. Overuse injuries are also called repetitive motion injuries, and they tend to occur when the same tissue is stressed over and over again without adequate time to recover and adapt. So it can occur over the course of several weeks, months, maybe even years, you know, if you're just ignoring things. Or, you know, you can be undertrained for an event. Like, let's say you're running a marathon that has a significant downhill portion and you haven't done any downhill training. That kind of repetitive pounding can, you know, really give you quad strains or shin splints.
Because your quads and shins are not sort of ready for that different type of terrain.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, the body is not a machine. So we all have biomechanical imbalances. Different tissues in your body are going to adapt at different rates. And as you're training, maybe at a higher volume or intensity, some of the tissues can't react as fast as others. So you may start to notice these biomechanical imbalances in your body. And this can lead to, you know, a breakdown in your kinetic chain.
And remember, it goes back to the kinetic chain, which we talked about, I think, on our last episode. If you have an injured spot, it's good to trace, you know, what is connected to that spot. And was there an imbalance in a muscle group, you know, higher up the kinetic chain that led to a breakdown?
Exactly. And there's some good questions to ask yourself when you're dealing with an overuse or overload injury.
So we want to give you the questions. So this is a great way to just sort of zero in on what might have gone wrong somewhere in the kinetic chain. And these questions are from Dr. Ben Chateau, who's a physical therapy doctor. So thank you, Dr. Ben, for supplying these. But Angie, just run us through the questions, and we hope that this will help anyone that might be dealing with an injury right now.
The first one is evaluate what tissue is painful or injured. So what part of the body are we dealing with here? Was there any type of direct trauma or a specific incident that you can think of that occurred that led to the injury? Have you experienced this pain before? And if so, can you trace it back to when it first started? What made the pain better? What makes it worse? Things like that. If the injury or pain is on only one side of the body, what is different from one side of your body to the other? What patterns can you identify that led to the pain? Have you noticed or has someone else commented about an unusual movement pattern or posture that you tend to stand, walk, or run in? For example, has anyone ever said that you tend to limp or sway when you walk or run? Do you have one foot that rolls out or turns different than the other?
Angie, have you ever been out there on the course and just seen somebody with running form that would indicate they've probably got an injury?
Some people really land heavy. I don't know if you've heard this before.
Kind of slap the ground.
You know, just like pounding the ground with every step, you know, or maybe breathing extremely hard. So, you know, all those things are clues that you have some kind of tightness or imbalance in your body.
And the insidious thing about running injuries, like let's say you have some plantar fasciitis in one of your feet. It'd probably be unusual if just one foot has it. But let's say your right foot is sore, so you sort of go easy on that foot while you run. What's going to happen?
Well, the other side of the body has to pick up the slack, and so then you may develop
an overuse injury.
Overuse injury on the other side.
Yep. So I've heard you say before that anytime you have to change your running form because of, you know, an injury or something sore, that is not a wise thing.
Right. You're basically asking for trouble if you keep doing that over the long term. It's, you know, it's one thing to do it to get through a race, but if you continue to run day after day, week after week, compensating for a sore area or an injury, pretty soon you're going to have multiple areas that are having trouble, which clearly no one wants.
Yes.
And a final question to ask is, are the wear patterns in your shoes symmetrical within the shoe and between the shoes? So look at the bottoms of your shoes, notice the wear patterns, look at them from the side. You know, you can tell a lot by the wear that your soles are getting.
I had an Achilles issue, which I've talked about on this show before, but one thing I did was I went to the chiropractor, and you know how chiropractor will like see how your leg length equality looks. And I had one leg that was like an inch or inch and a half longer than the other.
Yeah, no wonder.
And so he adjusted me. I have no idea how this all works, but he adjusted me and then took a photo of the leg length, and voila, they were equal again.
So something like that that you may be overlooking could be at the root of these overuse injuries.
And that's not even the craziest part. The chiropractor is an upper cervical doc, so the only place that he adjusted is across the top bone, basically adjusted my neck and my head. And then it straightened out my kinetic chain.
Right. Yeah, that is amazing.
I was saying, what is this wizardry?
So be sure to ask yourself these questions if you're dealing with any potential injuries, discomfort, any niggles, and start to get to the root of it. Don't leave any stones unturned, because we don't want you dealing with a serious injury down the road. And that's one of the reasons why we developed the Resilient Runner program for beating injury.
That's right. If you have a troubled area, there are videos and guides that go in depth about how to identify and what might be going on, and then, of course, how to self-treat those problem areas.
And we also know that prevention is also very important. So if you're an injury-prone runner and have dealt with areas before, the Resilient Runner program can help you strengthen and keep your body from going down the path of injury.
Of course, we got lots of great free content, articles, and podcast episodes about injury over at marathontrainingacademy.com. Love to have you visit us over there. There's also a resource called The Runner's Toolbox, 8 Inexpensive Items for Dealing with Injury at Home. And you can find that over there when you sign up for our newsletter, our email newsletter that we send out just about once a week. We'll send an email out just to keep everybody updated about new content that we produce and other stuff going on here. Thanks again to Bombas for sponsoring today's episode. They're the most comfortable socks with no annoying toe seam, no falling down your leg. They have solved every annoying sock problem imaginable. Just go to bombas.com/marathon and you'll get an additional 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/marathon. Well, thank you so much, folks, for listening to the MTA podcast. Hope it was a help. We always love hearing from you guys. You can email us through our website or find us on all the socials. Until next time, keep taking action toward your goals. And remember, you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.